Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Track Podcast. I am Liv Ekpone, joined with Ashley Titians and Corey Mall, a.k.a. our chat guy. We are coming off of a very busy weekend.
Yes, very busy. So, just like too many things happening, too many meets going on at the same time, and all big meets, too, you know?
It was insane. You were in Stanford. You survived the downpour. You were prepping for Penn Relays because we all know the vibes there. Corey and I were at Texas Relays. Florida Relays was also going on. We're going to get into all of that. So, but we're also going to discuss World Cross Country Championships, our favorite moments from the weekend, and we're going to take a closer look at a bigger invitational coming up later this week. But first of all, you guys, we have a very special guest joining us. So yes. Ashley, who do we have joining us today?
I know we're all really super excited for this interview that we have. You guys may know Clay Gravesandy as a season 6 cast member of the hit Netflix reality show Love is Blind. But before his run on Love is Blind, he was a key member of the South Carolina track and field program. He was a 6-time All-American, I believe, has career PRs of 20.95 for the 200, 45.93 for the 400. We have him here today on the show. We're great. We're super happy to have Clay here with us. So thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it so much. Thank you guys for having me.
Well, Clay, so, you know, all of us here, we're big track and field fans. So we know your history in track and field. You know, I see you repping the Gamecocks there, you know, on your shirt right there. We know you're an All-American in college, but we have to know, like, what drew you to track, like, initially? Like, what's your background in getting into the sport?
So, you know, I'm kind of like a typical guy that got into track and field. I played football originally, and, you know, the football coach said, hey, Clay, you need to get your speed up. So I went over and ran track and found out I was better at track than I was at football. Started getting better scholarship offers in track than I was in football, and then I just kind of focused on track and field for the duration of my college career.
I love that. Okay, so I think it's really interesting because I'm also from Maryland. You're from New Jersey. You went to South Carolina. Yeah. I was at Anna. We just figured out, like, we were running collegiate track at the same time. But what kind of drew you to South Carolina?
You know how it is. When you get recruited, you're trying to find out what's the best offer on the table. You know, at that point, right at my senior year, I was one of those kids, like, I can't wait to get out of my mom's house. I could tell my parents how I was so excited to get out. So it really was a rebellion thing for me to leave north, you know, where I was from up north, to go down south. I thought I'd have a better opportunity to have a chance to compete for the Olympics professionally. So that was kind of my decision of going down south.
Now, you know, when you were getting your start in high school, you know, you mentioned that you switch over from football to track. Like, once you made that switch, like, what did you like about running track in high school? Like, are there any big, you know, moments from your, you know, your prep career that you remember that really stood out to you?
I don't know. For track and field, it was kind of like me against the world type of feeling. I always felt as though that if I failed, it was something that had something to do with me. Whereas when I played football, you know, I was dependent on the quarterback to give me the ball. I was dependent on the lineman to block for me. Whereas track and field, you know, if I didn't train hard at practice, I kind of thought that that would, you know, contribute to me not performing well at track meet. So I always felt that I liked the fact that if I could control my own destiny, and track and field definitely gave me that advantage as a sport.
Now, when you got to South Carolina, we already mentioned this, but I mean, you had, you know, quite a successful career. We mentioned your PRs earlier, you know, especially in that 445.93 plus you competed at NCAAs in the 4x1 and the 4x4. Looking back on that now, like, what is your, is there a, like a moment or a race that stands out to you that you're like, okay, that is like one of my favorite moments from my whole track and field experience?
That's a good question. My favorite race of all time was probably my senior year when I became state champion, just because of I think it convinced me that I could do this sport for the long run, and I can actually compete in college. Because even when I committed to South Carolina, I was a little bit, you know, skeptical. I'm a kid from Jersey. I was beating up on those Jersey guys, but I was like, how am I going to beat the guys from Georgia, Florida, you know, California? So I think, you know, my state championship, I actually raced against Najee Glass. That gave me the confidence that, okay, I could compete in college collegiately. So I don't know if I answered the question, but hopefully we're on the same.
That's perfect. Area. That's perfect.
I love how you mentioned Najee. Love that guy. He's an amazing person. Yeah. Okay. Anywho, so I don't know. Have you been keeping up with the NCAA and with the Gamecocks and where they're at right now? Because you have like athletes like Jamecia Ford, who's like blowing things up in the 200 and the 400. Nick Harbor, who is a 5-star football recruit, kind of doing both right now. So just what are your thoughts on the Gamecocks right now?
Yeah, the Gamecocks are doing really well. I want to say shout out to the men. I feel like the, you know, especially with the coaching change, it was a lot of attention was towards the women's track and field program. And historically, South Carolina women's track and field has always done amazing. But I got to shout out to the men because, like, you know, I just seen Nick run at Williams-Baskin, and the guy's the truth. He has a strong kick. So I'm definitely going to be looking forward to see him compete. And you also have Alex. I thought Alex did pretty good. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what the men could contribute. And then, yeah, that freshman on the girl side, she's killing it. I think her time last week got her number one in the 200. So that's amazing.
Yeah, Jamecia has just been rocking it from the indoor season all the way to now. But for you, Clay, throughout your collegiate career, you've made the finals of the SEC championships. You, as Ashley mentioned, NCAA All-American as well. What have those moments just kind of taught you about yourself as an athlete and just how it's impacted you as a person that we know you as today?
Yeah, it's kind of alluding to the answer I gave before. But honestly, like, track and field is one of the sports like where you honestly looking at yourself, and you know, at the end of the day, if you could do better, I just feel like in life it's transition where, you know, for me, I could look at myself in the mirror and have those tough conversations. I think I'm in corporate sales right now, so I contribute me being coachable to me, you know, having fun in track and field, like with Coach Hill giving me, Coach Rye giving me advice on different things that I could do better. You know, him coaching me hard when we have 500s and, you know, like, dang, I don't think I'm ready to do this next set. You know, like, I feel like if I could do repeat 500s, I could do anything in life. So it's just kind of like that mentality of like practice, track and field practice is nothing like what I deal with in a regular world. So I kind of have that mentality, and I just kind of feel like I could take care of anything.
That should be a quote on a t-shirt. I can do repeat 500s. I can do anything in the world. I love that. That's amazing. Clay, the Penn Relays is coming up. It's the oldest track meet in the world, one of the largest. You competed there 4 times while you were with South Carolina. What do you remember from the experience?
Actually, been to after my senior year, I think that was my 8th year at Penn Relays. Because remember, I was from Jersey.
True.
Always compete at Penn. The Penn Relays is always historical. Not a fan of the big curve, but you know, it is what it is. I think for the ambiance of track and field, Penn Relays is a staple in the sport. It is nothing like the crowd reaction, especially on championship day. I competed in you know, what is it called?
Championship of America.
Yeah.
America a couple times. I remember in high school where you know, we actually got to the finals and we were competing with a lot of the Jamaicans, and I remember that just being so intimidated because I'm like, are these grown men we racing against?
I believe their last year, they graduated 19 in Jamaica, so they are a year older than most high schoolers. So there's some truth to that. Another thing about, you know, track and field as a whole is how much it's changed since the 8-9 years you've graduated. NIL is changing college athletics right now. Track budgets at programs are much bigger. Opportunities to race at larger meets are available and giving athletes a chance to prove themselves on the biggest stages. Have you followed any of this in the track world? And what do you make of the changes impacting college athletes today?
Well, I'm all for athletes getting paid, especially if you're going to use our name and likeness to monetize. I definitely think that athletes should get paid. Track and field is a little bit different. You know, I do think that, you know, in terms if institutions are able to generate revenue from track, then I do believe those student athletes should get paid. But, you know, when I was at South Carolina, we didn't really have a track when I was there. We have a track now. We have an indoor and outdoor. But when I was there, we didn't really have that. So I didn't really see where it was too much where I was going to be able to monetize off my name and likeness. But nowadays, with us having track meets, with us selling merch, with, you know, like meets like Texas, you know, institutions like Texas A&M, Florida, that, you know, host staple track meets like Florida Relays and stuff like that, I do believe those some of those athletes should start getting paid. So I'm all for it, especially if it makes sense. If a company sees an athlete and they think that they could help, you know, put their brand out there, I'm all for athletes taking advantage of that.
Now, Clay, I feel like we have to move on to another topic of conversation here. We know you were on Love is Blind, so we want to ask you some questions about that, obviously. And first off, I think we're all just really curious, like, you know, what enticed you to join the show in the first place? Like, why, you know, what was, you know, something that went through your mind that made you want to join the show?
So they actually recruited me. I didn't know anything about the show. They came at me as the Charlotte Single Project. So I had no idea this was Love's Blind. It's probably like the fourth interview that I had. I spoke about it on the Dear Future Wifey podcast, but honestly, I was just kind of like answering the call and, you know, being myself. And they kept moving to the next stage. I honestly have no idea how I moved so far. So, but I'm here now, right?
Oh, that's so interesting. So, yeah, so they reach out to you. You go through some calls and some interviews. You know, like, what was that process like? Like, obviously, it sounds like you had to go through rounds of, you know, chatting with people and interviews to see if you were fit. Like, what was that process like for you?
Yeah, so it was about 6 interviews that we had to do. We had we had phone calls with some execs. Some of the, you know, casting directors. And then we also did like a virtual call where they kind of had a change in our outfit to, you know, see if we're going to be presentable for Netflix liking. So it was just a variety of interviews, you know, very, you know, to me, vague questions. Do you want to get married? And you're like, yeah, of course I want to be married. Like, do you want kids? Yes, I want kids. You know, like, I didn't feel like there was anything like where I like said anything that sold them on me joining the show. But, I always been saying that I think the show was good for me in terms of my dating aspect, but in terms of the interview, it was more so them trying to get to know me. It's like a job interview in a sense.
Okay. Ultimate question now. What is more nerve-wracking, going through rounds in track or going through the rounds of this casting with Love is Blind?
The casting was not a problem at all. Like I didn't put that much energy into it, I'll be honest with you. Now, of course, I was excited for the opportunity, but like I said, I didn't know it was Love is Blind. They came out as a Charlotte Singles Project. So, you know, I'm just thinking I'm about to do this experiment, but, you know, it wasn't like repeat 500s. It wasn't like, you know, competing at a track meet where I got to go through lactic acid. Like, you know, so the anxiety I would have for a track meet, there's nothing else that competes with that.
Well, once you were casted, Clay, I'm curious because I have watched every season. I do watch the reality shows. And I'm always curious, from start of filming to finish, how long do you actually know the significant other that you're with?
Yeah, that's a good question. So in the pods, you're dating for 10 days. Then the 10th day is the reveal day. So in my case, I finally got to see AD. After that, you go to your romantic getaway. In our case was Dominican Republic. So that's 5 days. Then after that, you have 3 weeks of filming in the hometown that Love is Blind has chose to film at, in our case, Charlotte. So altogether, the duration is around 6 weeks. of actually getting to know who your partner is in terms of making that decision if you want to marry them or not.
I think the other question I have too, I'm sure being on a reality show and, having your life almost filmed on camera, I'm sure at first that's like, it's like almost, I don't know if weird's the right word, but it's definitely like, I'm sure it was a different experience for you than something you've, experienced in the past. Like, did you feel that while filming, or did you get more comfortable as you went along? Like, what was that like for you?
Yes, definitely. It definitely was a tough to adjust to, because you're having like regular conversation with your friends and it's like 10 cameras on you. And it's like, do I open up or do I just kind of like, but one thing I would say, in the pods, it was so many cameras around us, more so than when we were in Charlotte. I think I opened up to it. Once we got past the pod, we had a camera crew that worked with us from Dominican Republic to Charlotte. So I definitely got a lot more comfortable because the same camera crew kept on coming to film with me. And I got to know those guys' names. I played Harry Potter with them. So it was cool.
Okay, that makes sense. I understand that. Okay, so on your Instagram, you're currently sitting at 249K. Before yeah. Love is Blind, how many followers did you have?
Like 3,000.
Oh wow. God. So it just like boomed. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, how has that changed, I guess, for your life? Because you are now a public figure, the notoriety of you being you. I mean, has it changed the way you experience life at all?
I think it's probably made me tone in more towards who I am. I don't think I had the best in terms of public perception with the show. So it's not like I'm going out and saying, hey, guys, I'm Clay. Come take pictures with me. I'm not doing any of that. I'm going to a grocery store. I got a hat on. I'm trying to, like, be incognito. One of the things, I have a water rental company, so I'm always at the lake, and I could kind of control my setting. So I've been more so hanging around the people who have, who've already been with me. I'm kind of staying in my foundation more so than trying to branch out and, celebrate the fact that I'm on TV. That's never been my MO. I'm kind of like an introvert, extrovert, but more so introvert. So it's a little bit weird when people just recognize me out of nowhere. I've had a couple awkward incidents at the airport where, you just trying to get on a flight and then someone comes up to you like, Clay? And it's just like, all right, it's a little too much.
Well, I'm curious then. I mean, I thought you accounted yourself really well on the show, and you made it to the altar and made a decision there. And then, at the reunion, you talked about, you and AD and even wanting the opportunity to date her in the future. Would you do anything differently about the show if you were to do it again? And also, where are you and AD right now?
Yeah, good question. Good question. I see where you're going here. AD are cool. I support AD 100%. At the end of the day, she changed the way how I date forever. I mentioned this so many times that I always felt like I dated from a pleasurable perspective and more so always looked at the physical aspect. When I was with AD, I actually did the process right. We fell in love without me seeing what she looked like. And I think that's changed the way I date forever, because now I think I've always dated from a selfish perspective. So me with AD kind of taught me how to be more selfless and also show up for my partner, because it was hard going through this experiment with her and, just dealing with the balances of life. So I really got to credit AD for just being an awesome person, because that's what she was. And we're good. There's no beef. I think the internet was trying to divide us up a little bit, but me and AD are cool. So there's no issues on that. And then what was the first question? I apologize.
I guess if you would do anything different about the experience, I mean, not even just getting the altar and that decision, like about the show at all, would you approach it a different way?
I probably would have watched it before joining. For sure.
Makes sense. All right. So Clay, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I feel like a couple of the guys that watched the show, they're a little more calculated. they kind of knew. I think I talked a little bit too much, so I gave them a little bit too much to edit. Yeah. I probably would be a little bit more concise with what I'm saying. That way, like, my words can't be misconstrued.
Well, actually, I have a follow-up here. So did you get a fair edit? Do you think you got a fair edit?
I think that I think that a lot of the context of what I said was taken out of context, if that makes sense. Like, I know, like, the cheating thing was a big thing where it kept saying, like, it kept making it seem like, I'm going to cheat. And I was like, no, I wasn't saying that. Like, I was saying, like, have we built the foundation up in this 6 weeks where we're going to be with each other for eternity because marriage is important. I don't want to cheat. Then they'll cut the whole first sentence out and then put, like, I don't want to cheat.
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, other than that, in the context of it, I think that there were some conversations that we could have had that Netflix could have showed to show a little bit more about me and AD's relationship. Because I do think some people were able to say, like, wow, you and AD had a dynamic relationship. And some people were like, well, Clay, you were only into her for the physical. And it was like, no, me and AD had so many, like, dope conversations that were just like, I don't know. Like, to me, I think we showed our experience and our love. But, you know, at the end of the day, I receive it because everything that I said did come out my mouth. And I do think that, it gave me a chance to me be a fly on the wall in my own life. So I'm not mad at it. I receive it. I think people who have comments and saying that, hey, Clay, you should clean this up, I'm not opposed to it. I do think I'm coachable. So at the end of the day, I'm not going to have issues with people who don't know me giving me their opinion. You know, it's more so about the people who I love. If they have any commentary and say, hey, Clay, this is what you need to do differently, then that's the advice I'm going to listen to. And also, I watched the show myself, and I also seen that there's things that I could do better. So I'm not mad about the edit. Mm-hmm.
Now that you've had this experience, would you say you would go on another reality TV show again? Or are we done with that?
You know, I'm gonna say no, I won't do another TV show, but, like, you know, I'm like the biggest contradiction ever. Like, I'll say something today, and the next day I'll be like, you know what, that might not be a bad idea. So don't take my word for that. I don't know. I'll just say IDK.
All right, Clay, before we let you go, one final question for you. Obviously, there's a huge variety of reality shows, so therefore there's a lot of reality stars. But, okay, yeah. To put this into perspective, if we had a 400-meter race pitting together the fastest reality TV stars, yourself included, who wins?
I'm blowing them out the park.
Love that.
Love
that. I'd love to see that, actually, a 400-meter race between, like, reality stars.
That would be awesome. Yeah. I would totally watch that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
What do you think you can hold down right now?
Yeah.
Where you're at.
What could you drop right now, today?
So I haven't ran probably competitively in probably about 4 years, but I did bust out some 200 because I was trying to emulate like a 2 mile without running 2 miles. So I was trying to do like, 8 200s. I was going pretty good. I was going 30-second pace. And for somebody that's out of shape, come on, help me out, track and field people. Like 8 VP 200s. You know, walking the curve, I thought it was solid. So I think that out of shape, I could definitely go. I can't see me going nothing less than 48.5.
Okay.
I really can't. But,
all right. That's
bullish. That might be bullish, but I can't see myself running anything less than 48.5.
Do you plan on running anything soon, like competitively, to kind of get back out there? Doesn't have to necessarily be a sprint, but maybe a little 5K, 10K?
I'm definitely going to probably start doing a little bit more run. I kind of do that right now in a sense, but I'm just not competing competitively, but, yeah, definitely going to get out there. I actually want to coach eventually. I think that would be something that would, like, be real fulfilling to me to give back to kids. Cause I always felt like my coaches had a big impact into who I am today. So I want to kind of, give that back to kids, down in the future.
I love that. Any last-minute questions for Clay?
I think we covered a lot of things here today.
We covered a lot. I'm all for it. Clay, thank you so much for your time today, and we're just wishing you all the best as your life unfolds into just doing Clay things. So thank you so much for your time.
Right. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Definitely going to be subscribing to the podcast now because I love track and field. So I hope y'all do. Peace.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Clay.
Wow, that was a moment.
That was great.
That was a great moment. That was fantastic.
Awesome.
Loved it, yeah.
So awesome. All right, so let's move on, shifting a little bit more into track and just what happened over the weekend. Let's talk about our top moments from Texas relays. There was a lot to unpack. I know, Ashley, you weren't on the ground, but I know you heard a lot of things go through
the
grapevine. So what would you say was your top moment from from Texas.
Well, as you mentioned, I was out at Stanford, but how could you not hear about that 4x2 that happened on the women's side? We see it's technically not a world record because it didn't have everyone from the same, representing the same country, I believe.
Yeah.
But we saw 4x2 world best go down, world all-time best, 127.05, I believe. And that included the squad here that trains in Austin with Coach Flo. That's Diener Asher-Smith, Rashida Adeleke, Lene Thomas, and Julian Alfred. Just wow. Like what? You were there, right? Were you there to watch that in person?
I was there on Saturday.
Corey was on the ground.
Corey, what were your reactions? Like, how did people react to that?
I think they reacted to the final leg.
Yeah.
You know, I think when a race starts like that, you don't quite grasp it up until, you know, you're kind of on record pace. So by the end, as the announcers sort of broadcasting, we got the world's best on the track. That's when the crowd started to sort of, you know, provide that swell.
Yeah, and I think it probably, too, I mean, you have Julian Alfred and Rashida Adeleke who ran here last year. So I'm sure that home crowd, you know, they're cheering for them for sure, those Longhorns.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me was just kind of looking at Gabby Thomas. We already knew that she tends to have her season opener at Texas Relays, and golly, she did not disappoint, running a 10.88 with a little extra boost of wind there, but nonetheless 22.08 for that 200 meters. So I think she's in a really solid spot. Broke the meet record in that 200. Looked fantastic doing it. So shout out to Gabby Thomas there. And we're also huge fans of Akayla Garrett as well.
Yes, uh-huh.
Freshman from Texas, ran the NCAA number 2 time so far this season with the 56.19 in the 400-meter hurdles and looked fantastic doing it. Ashley, for you also, anything on the high school side that caught your attention?
Well, I think one of the biggest storylines across all the divisions has to be Elizabeth Leachman, excuse me, in that Invitational 5K there. She's a high school sophomore out of Bernie Champion. And she not only won against all collegians in the invite 5K, she set a meet record and then also ran a new high school national record of 15:25.27. So, gosh, I mean, that's super fast. And again, I think she was lapping people in that field. She's lapping collegians. So just to put into perspective, like, just how fast that time is, like, that would put her toward the top of the NCAA.
It's ridiculous. Corey, you and I were there to watch Elizabeth Leachman live. What would you say was probably your biggest takeaway from her race?
I mean, just how informed she is. By the first lap, she separated, and she was on the mission of trying to achieve this goal. I think, I mean, we know what she can accomplish. I think going out there and actually doing it is another thing. And she just continues to, you know, amaze us.
Yeah. Just super proud of Elizabeth Leachman. Corey, were there any other moments that really caught your attention from Texas Relays?
On Saturday, the 100 hurdles, Christina Clemens, you know, seeing her race maybe for the first time, she looked really, really good. 12.79, win legal for her. First or second outdoor race this season, back from taking off last year after she gave birth to her son. She made the Olympic team in 2021 and ran really well there, 12.51, 12.53. So she said afterward, her goal is to make a team again. And then not only that, but to podium, to place, to really, you know, make that experience count. So that's her goal this year.
Awesome.
It makes me think about just how many moms are out there right now that, you know, are looking to make that Olympic team, that they're among the top in the U.S. I mean, I think of like Ellie St. Pierre, you know, she just had a child as well. And we saw what she did indoors, winning that indoor 3K world title, I believe. So, you know, I always, you know, I think that's awesome. And it's always really great, I think, to see moms chasing their goals, absolutely, you know, especially in a big year, like an Olympic year.
Yeah, I think of Nia Ali comes into mind. No, Allison Felix did it before she retired too, now expecting her second child as well. So I'm all in support of the mamas racing. I think it's super amazing. I kind of want to talk about a little bit more what makes Texas Relays so unique. You know, this event has been around. This was the 96th Texas Relays. Like, the fact that we're even thinking about that and saying that just shows how historic it is. So why do you think it's just is one of those meets that we always should have on our radar?
Well, it's interesting, right? So I've lived in Austin now for almost 2 years. So not this year, but the previous year, I went to Texas Relays just to watch as like a spectator. And because I just like so many people, there's so much buzz about it, you know, and growing up in North Carolina, like, I mean, obviously you hear about Texas Relays, but I don't feel like it fully clicks like just how cool the environment is. And like, so I went there on the last day to watch. And when I tell you that like that whole stadium was packed of people just cheering. And it was very obvious that all these people are just true fans of track and field. Like, that's something you don't see every day, you know, like, you know, I feel like I grew up in, like, you know, you go to university track and the stands, you know, aren't full or something. You go to an invite, there's not a whole lot of people there, but seeing like basically like a huge contingent of people that are dedicated to the sport and love and just want to watch it just for fun, like on a Saturday. Like, I think that's kind of, you know, that's always been interesting to me. And I thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Corey, how about for you?
Yeah. And to build off of that, I mean, they treat their alums really, really well.
Yeah.
Our CEO, Mark Floriano, was at the meet this past week too. I mean, he's a UT alum. I saw Tara Davis there on Saturday. I think they really appreciate and give respect to the alumnus that come back to these meets, and they create this, you know, special areas. There's VIP tents. There was one up at the press box. There was, you know, one down the track. They really give that love back to the athletes that gave so much for the program. And you see that at other meets too. Like Penn Relays, there's a VIP area. I remember like on having one that one night where it was raining, right? It was raining. They were on the infield, right?
Yeah. And I remember that.
They were chilling.
And we were all out in the rain working.
Yeah. But I don't think I've ever seen a meet like this where so many alums came back and like experienced that. Maybe they love Texas and they just want to be in this meet that represents their state. But it was really cool to see.
Yeah, I saw Morgan and Marquise Goodwin. They were down there. Shalonda Goodman was there too. Like, a lot, as you mentioned, Corey, just a lot of Texas alumni there. And I think what also just makes Texas Relay so unique is just the combination of elite competition. Like, you're bringing out some of the best high school programs, not only in the state, but I'm thinking about like Archbishop Carroll, right? Coming, flying in from DC to be able to compete and have that experience to face some of the elite competition. Then you have the collegians, and then also that opportunity to have those professional athletes have their debut, like Gabby Thomas and so on and so forth. So I think it's just all inclusive. The only thing they're missing is 8 and unders, and then we would hit every single thing. But other than that, I think that's why Texas Relays is so special, is it just surrounds track and field from all different ages, talented individuals across the board, which is super amazing. So let's take our chats over now to the East Coast. Let's talk about Florida Relays, because we did a kind of a deep dive into this on the Mile Split on the Line podcast of just like which, I guess, meet from the weekend kind of stood out the most. And I think Florida, I think most of us can agree, like, brought out a lot of great competition. Yeah. So, Ashley, speaking of great competition, what do you think was that big race or the individuals that really kind of stood out to you from Florida Relay?
For me, it's the men's 4x1. For me, I think that was the one that stood out to me.
Yes.
Personally, because let's look at this. You had Gainesville Elite. I think they're in 37-67.
Yes.
In that 4x1. And the guys on that squad, Grant Holloway, PJ Austin, Arian Knighton,
yes,
Joe Fonbelay. Seeing all those guys on a team is always really fun. That's why I like these relays events, because you see people like actually running on a team that you would never see. So I thought that was really cool. And I think I saw, you know, them chatting afterwards with people, and I think they had a quote of like, you know, we may be competitors, like, you know, down the line, but like when we come together here, there's like no beef. There's no politics. Like, that's just, you know, we're just out here having fun. Another interesting note, Noah Lyles was on one of those 4x1 teams, but didn't run because they couldn't get the stick to him.
Oh, he was on one?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So.
They couldn't get the stick to him too fast.
Couldn't get the stick to him. Mm. They missed the exchange.
Dang. Well, I also agree with Gainesville Lee. I was really impressed. I saw a reel kind of floating through my social media. I was like, oh my gosh, 37.67. That is ridiculous. PJ and Fonbulet also ran the 100 as well. They went 10.02 and 10.09 for a great start to their season. And speaking of also having a great start, can we talk about Quincy Wilson really briefly?
Sure.
Because 45.19 is ridiculous. And just the way this kid just continues to impress us. I know for me personally, I'm just not really surprised, because it's like we saw what he did at New Balance National Indoors, breaking the national high school record. But to just continue that success and not holding back to produce a 45.19 is just insane.
I said this yesterday, but hey, he got the Olympic trials auto cue.
Corey, what are your thoughts on Mr. Wilson?
Auto cue, man. Auto cue.
It's funny because I feel like for the past probably what, like 5 weeks, we've mentioned Quincy at least once on the podcast. Is this the Quincy Wilson show now?
Yes. I want to say yes. I also want to talk about his teammates as well. The Bullis School girls also took down a 20-year-old high school national record in the 4x4. They went 335.23, which was previously held by Long Beach Poly of California. They went 335.49. Honestly, when I saw this race, it was very competitive, right? You had Mount Vernon there. Miami Northwestern was in that mix. It was just kind of those three teams battling it out from kind of start to finish. But it honestly came down to Morgan Rothwell on that anchor leg. The last 200 meters was able to just bring home the victory and kind of separate herself from the rest of the competition. If you would have told me Bullis School would have done this at Florida Relays, I kind of honestly would have been a little bit surprised. I was honestly shocked to kind of see it this early. Like, I felt like the 4x4 potentially could have fallen maybe a little bit later in the season. But the fact that all four girls just did an amazing job.
Yeah, I saw the time. I was like, oh, that's a national record. Okay, cool. So we'll probably maybe see it go down again, potentially down the line.
The parallel here, I'll make a suggestion. I think when you see a cross-country runner coming off of a national meet, they go right into indoor, they run a 5K, and they rip a good one.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like New Balance indoor, great season, come back a couple weeks later, rip a good one in the 4x4. You still have that fitness. You're still building, but you still are kind of leaning on some of that stuff.
I think that's a fair argument, fair comparison.
Corey, Florida Relays. Biggest moment for you.
Did you mention Chekna Traore of Penn State yet?
I did not. I was going to let you chat first, but we could talk about the 200s from Florida Relays. 20.23. That's incredible. Traore from Penn State. I think he was, didn't he say he was at another university first and then transferred?
He transferred in from Division III Ramapo.
Okay.
Out of New Jersey?
Yeah, and just put together 20.23. Nick Harbor finished third overall, had a lot of extra win there, but 20.38 to kind of kick off that season. Just what were your thoughts on?
Well, remember the conversation we had about Dakota Lindworm back in the Olympic trials?
Yeah, Now you're seeing this kind of play out here.
Yeah, her high school experience, you know, she was an average runner in Minnesota. Traore ran in New Jersey for Snyder High School. He had a 100-meter best of 11.39. 23.22 in the 200 and 50.08 in the 400. So he went to Division III Ramapo and just absolutely improved out the wazoo there and finished with D3 records in the 200 of 20.72 indoors and 20.25 outdoors. You know, this is an example of someone, you know, kind of betting on themselves, keeping in the sport and developing. I mean, that's what you love to see. And he now has an opportunity with Penn State to really shine, and he has. I mean, he got to the NCAA indoor championships recently, and I think he has a shot, you know, over the outdoor season to really do something special too.
Is he the biggest dark horse in the field, potentially, in the NCAA?
I would say yes.
Like
under the radar, and I don't think anybody knew.
Yeah.
It's quite talking about
him. Yes. Yeah. And now all of a sudden you drop this and you're like, oh, wait.
Yeah.
Your head's kind of turned now.
Yeah.
All in the game and I are on the same wavelength here. We have to talk about Jamecia Ford. Huge fans of her. I feel like every episode we just need to talk about Jamecia Ford. 22:37, 49:38 second split on that 4x4. I don't know if you had a chance to watch it.
I did watch it.
Fifth to first.
I'm telling you, she's a gamer.
Oh.
She's a gamer.
My goodness.
But I feel like, I know we've talked about this before, like she really started peaking toward the end of her high school career. I think we saw her run at Adidas and AAU Junior Olympics. That's really when she started, I feel like, to show those glimmers of, you know, the star that she could potentially become. I don't know if we all necessarily thought that it would happen this quick, maybe at South Carolina, but I have to say, I feel like I've always seen that competitive side of her. Like, I remember back to Adidas when I think she ran the 400 and then like had to turn around 20 minutes later and she won the 200, I believe. And she almost threw up on me in between doing an interview. So,
yeah. I remember like it was yesterday because I was standing next to you when all of this happened. But yeah,
shows to me like there's something in her that's like, I want to win. I want to compete. And so going from fifth to first, splitting 49, like I'm not surprised actually.
I'm not surprised either, but it's just the fact that you win 49.3.
Yeah.
That is, don't want to say unheard of, but it's ridiculous to even think about. That's how fast she's moving right now at this point of the season. All right, I'm going to kick things off now to Ashley, talking about her biggest breakthrough moments from the Stanford Invitational. Ashley survived it. We're happy that you're here. You just went through like huge downpour. So
yeah, unfortunately Friday for most of the day it was torrential downpouring. I was getting flashbacks to Penn relays last year, 2023. Mm-hmm. But we got through it, and thankfully during like the 5Ks and the 10Ks later on in the evening, wasn't raining too hard. It was just a little drizzle here and there, so that was good. That. And because of that, we had some really good performances there in those invitational 5Ks and 10Ks. I think some of my top storylines. First, the one that stands out to me the most, I think, is Maddie Elmore. Mm-hmm. I think she had a big breakthrough moment in the women's 5K. She not only won the race in 15:15.79, but she broke a long-standing Oregon program 5K record with that win, which, I mean, we all know the history with Oregon. I think the record had stood since the 1980s, I believe. So taking down a record that stood for that long is pretty crazy. And I remember when she finished, she like came off and she kind of started running toward me, and she just kind of casually just like said to herself, like, oh, that's a school record. Like, you know, she did it, and she realized, like, oh, gosh, like, I broke a school record, which that was pretty cool to see. So I thought on the women's side, she was my biggest performance there. But then the men's 10K, you don't always see a 10K coming down to a sprint to the finish.
No, you don't.
And that's exactly what happened in the 10K here. You saw Evan Jenkins of Washington, breakout star of the weekend, I think. He ran 28:04.58 in a battle to the line with Gonzaga's Will Smith. And I think we have the video here of the finish.
Will Smith of Gonzaga, step for step, stride for stride.
I mean, they're just neck and neck right here.
Literally putting on the jets.
Short of 10K is kind of hard. Kind of. Not putting on the jets, but, you know, it comes. It's not too often that you have people stride for stride into 10K.
Yeah, and especially as a freshman, too.
28:04 is no joke, too. I believe he's a redshirt freshman, so he's technically a sophomore. But I think a lot of people, I mean, no one's really been talking about Evan Jenkins before this weekend, I would right. say. And I had a chance to talk with him afterwards, and he was really pumped. He was like, hey, I was not really expecting that, but we got a good performance down. And we all know the strong distance squad, especially, you know, both on the men's and women's side that, you know, we have going in Washington. So he's probably just the next guy up. I don't know.
Love it. Mm-hmm. Anybody else that caught your attention?
I love it. You're having me talk about.
Well, I can chat about it too. I was really impressed with Raven Rogers opening up in the 800 meters, going 2:02.57. I know we're about to start seeing a lot of these professionals start to open up their outdoor season in the hope of, you know, getting set for the Olympic trials. Before we know it, it will be here. So we're starting to see these big neighbors really start to get out there. Hilda Elamoy, how do you pronounce it?
Elamoy.
Thank you. The mm-hmm. sophomore from Alabama, I felt like did a fantastic job in that 10K as well, going 32:22.20 in a dominant effort there by Hilda. And it's just great to kind of see these distance athletes really put out some really strong performances at Stanford. And then we also talked about Maddie Raven and then Kai Robinson, 13:35.95.
Kai Robinson's was interesting because he ran the 5K and the 10K on the same day. He elected not to be in the fast section of the 5K, which would have been like right before the 10K. He ran in a much slower heat of the 5K in the morning. And I think the strategy there was he was trying to get regional qualifying positions for both races, go ahead and knock him out. So, I mean, he ran all by himself. I mean, it looked like he was tempoing the 13:35 5K, and that held up as the fastest mark from any of the races. And I think he ran it out in section 6 or something like that, and then ran the 10K later. So I thought that was pretty impressive,
too. Just being strategic there. Corey, any other thoughts?
Well, with Washington here, I just wanted to bring up a question, I guess, with Evan Jenkins kind of breaking through here. Kind of leads me back to Andy Powell and Maurizio Powell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think when you look at Washington, they're always in these positions of success at multiple distances at the middle and the long distances. What kind of, you know, patterns are they creating at Washington that allow this program to keep kind of being front and center, sort of, you know, in front of the masses?
I guess maybe it's just consistency among have like a strong group. They have a big squad, I think, but there's consistency across, right? Like I think back to like the indoor mile. Like, I mean, Luke Houser won that, you know, two-time champion indoors. You know, they always have, you know, just a huge squad. I think back to that 1500 mile squad. I feel like I always see like five Washington guys in a final. So maybe it comes down to that. And like they've found a system that people are buying into, you know, like if people can buy into a system, like you're going to see success across the board, whether it's, you know, Luke Houser, who, like I mentioned, who now is a two-time champion indoors in the mile, or it's Evan Jenkins, who's now having a big breakthrough. Like, I think that's kind of the theme potentially.
Got it. Yeah, I think it's great. All right, let's move on to World Cross Country Championships, going over that, and then other moments. We're kind of going to put this all here together as those big moments that we saw. So World Cross Country Championships happen. Not really surprised with Beatrice Chebet kind of defending her title. Helped Kenya sweep the first top five places, which is amazing. I think their fifth runner was 17th, if I'm not mistaken, just to really put it out there. So that was fantastic. I don't think any of us here are surprised by that.
Yeah, I mean, if you look across the board at World Cross Country, like you mentioned, there's really no surprises. Like, I think we all expected Beatrice to, I mean, we've seen what she's done on the track and in the roads. Seeing her come here to defend her title, not surprised. But think about that, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like, come on. Like, Kenya just dominated everyone in this race, and then I think their 600 finished 17th. But then even on the men's side, it was kind of a similar story, at least on the individual point. Again, you had a defending champion here, so that was, you know, really interesting here. I think that was Jacob Kiblimo of Uganda who defended his title, and that was a closer race. But again, kind of the same here. If you're looking at Team USA, though, I think the probably the top highlight is Wayne Kalati, top American, and on the women's side, she finished 15th. So yeah, really interesting. And then I want to actually give a shout out to, I saw this photo circulating, Emmanuel Boer, just like, want to give kudos to him because this was just like true cross country racing. His shoe like split in half, like halfway through the race.
Oh my God.
In the mud pit. And he continued on. Like, you can see his like big toe like pointing out
wow.
of the shoe. And I've seen another angle too where like if you look at it, like it literally was split down the center here, like the sole ripped away from the upper of the shoe.
Oh no.
But he still finished 25th overall. That's, second for Team USA.
That's wild.
Hey, cross country, it gets intense.
Hey, that's cross country for you.
Especially here, like and we see this consistently with like World Cross Country Championships, but like, I mean, there's hay bales, there's a mud pit, there's like, I think there were these like blue hills you had to go up.
Ramps.
Yeah, that's the word. But yeah, like it's like so. And then it brought up this debate of like, okay, what's like true cross country? Like what should be like an actual cross country course, like a world championship?
Well, in Europe, it might mean different than in the US. Where we have like manicured courses.
Yep.
Yeah. Where we just want to see fast times on grass.
Yeah. And I think the other thing too is I believe in here in Belgrade, like it was just a bunch of loops. Like it was pretty flat, but you had all these obstacles, which is interesting. And it brought up the debate of like, if you could pick like the true, like real venue of cross country worlds, like where should it be?
Only game mentioned that one of the Ethiopian women also ran the last lap without one of her shoes.
Oh, wow.
Man, that course in Belgrade was just taking victims.
Left and right.
But I think it's worth noting that, which is interesting, this race will be coming to the U.S. next year.
Yes.
Tallahassee, FSU's course.
Interesting.
That's really
interesting. Which is an interesting, I don't know.
I saw that too. Yeah.
It is a difficult course, but yeah. I wonder if they will add
any obstacles to it?
Diversions.
That would be epic.
Yeah, there are no like you know small creeks to pass. There's no huge mud pits, but it does cross different terrains, grass to sand, and others. So it's a cool course.
Yep,
cool course. I know we talked about Wayne Kalati. Huge shout out to Allie Ostrander. Huge fan of her. She was the second American, finished 30th overall. So huge fan of Allie O. All right. Any other big notable performances from the weekend?
Well, I think before we move on to the weekend ahead, we have to talk again, just briefly about Tobogo. You know I'm a big fan.
Here's the Tobogo segment that is going to be included now for every show. excuse me. When you showed this to me, I was like, Tobogo did what now? If you have not seen his 200 meters, he jogged. I don't
care. South Africa, yes.
I don't care what anybody says. He jogged the first 100, teased the field because they came up right next to him. And all of a sudden he's like, okay, well, I guess I'll sprint now. And then like let off the gas 5-10 meters before it goes 19.94 into a negative 1.2.
I mean, and again, this came in South Africa, his 200 meter season opener. I've never seen a race where like, it looked like he was pacing like an 800 or something like that. It's like you're just chilling. discipline, like the first little bit. Like, who does that? Who does that? He was just playing with everyone. He was just playing those mind games. And then he was like, nah, like you said, nah, I'm just going to hit the gas with like 50 meters to go.
So funny. I showed you the tweet because someone said first 100 was like 10.6, second 100 was like 9.3. I was like, that's exactly what it looks like.
Basically. And it's interesting now. He's the world leader now in both the 200 and the 400, which... Now I just want to see him run a 100. Let's make all three.
Oh my gosh. When that happens, that's going to be insane.
Again, I think
because now my brain is like, what are we doing for Olympics? Because now in my head, my brain wants to be like, I think you should do the four, like try to do the 4-2 double. Again, I have not looked at the schedule to see if it even remotely makes sense. But let's just say it does. But then we drop 100 and it's all so fast. I'm like, wait, the triple is just not in the cards. So where do you go? 1-2, 2-4?
Well, historically, he's been a 1-2, so I'd expect that's probably what he would do, but we'll see how the season unfolds. Again, yeah. I'm sure he's just trying to get those first few races under his belt, just get a feel for the track and the season. You know, like we've seen all the pros open up this weekend in America, basically. So
yes,
he'll be interesting.
All right, one final remark for me. Y'all know I'm a proud Aggie here. I have to give a huge shout out to Sam Whitmarsh, who competed at LSU this weekend, clocked a 144.46 in the 800, which currently is the NCAA leader and also number 8 in NCAA history.
I believe that's also the Olympic standard, if I'm not correct. So maybe. I think I saw that somewhere. I don't want to put out misinformation.
You sure isn't 45? It wouldn't be 46, would it? 144.46?
You think it's 45?
No, he ran 144. He ran 144.
I'm saying 144.45 would be the standard. Or is it 144 is the standard?
I was going to say, all I knew is I think he hit the standard is basically what I was trying to say. I don't know what exactly it is. I'm trying to look it up right now.
Gotcha.
I should have looked that up before I said that. But 144.70. So,
okay, we're good.
There we go.
Yep. We're good.
Took me a second. That was right.
Awesome. So those were some great performances. Corey, any thoughts from the chat? Any thoughts from you?
I think y'all are crazy about Tobogo. He did not jog the first 100
meters.
Are
you kidding me?
He did not jog.
Corey, I don't think we saw the same race if you don't think he jogged that.
It depends on your definition of jog, I guess, is what I'm getting at. Yours is different than mine. So,
Ashley, do you think he jogged?
Yes. Corey's just a hater. He's just a hater.
I'm not. You can't jog 10.6. Even if you want the first 100, 10.6, you can't jog 10.6.
What I'm saying is he definitely did not.
I've seen Noah Lyles do that before. I've seen Noah Lyles in 100 in the last 50 meters just move away from the field. I've seen him do that. You wouldn't say that he was jogging in 100.
Maybe I would.
Maybe. Well, I would like to know what the chat thinks if he jogged the first 100. I think he did. All right. We're in an interesting time right now. I feel like a lot of docuseries are starting to come about now revolving track and field. So let's talk about the track and field docuseries that are coming up.
Well, I think we brought up when we were making this show, this was one thing I wanted to talk about because I feel like we saw at Texas Relays, you know, just... I think Red Bull was there filming Dina Asher-Smith, and they've kind of announced that they're following some of their European athletes and making a series leading up to the Olympics. And it made me think, like, gosh, like, that's not the only – like, why are we seeing all these docuseries now about track and field athletes? Like, you have that one. You obviously have the big one from Netflix that's been in the works, and it's going to follow the top sprinters this year. I think they started filming this maybe at the end of last year. You know, as you're going ahead to the Olympics, it makes you wonder, it's like, you know, will this hit like some of the other previous docuseries that have come out more recently about some of these more niche sports, right? Like I think back to the Formula One documentary series that they did. And I mean, I think it was called Drive to Survive, I believe. And Formula One, I think people have said it kind of blew up after that documentary series. And then they've also done Breakpoint following professional tennis. So it makes me wonder, like, there's always that, I guess there's always been that struggle and conversation, I feel like, in track and field of like, oh, we can't make it mainstream, where it's hard to like get more people to follow it, like be more interested in it. Like, is this something that now maybe we'll get more people interested? Like, what's it going to be like? I don't know.
I think to answer your question, it's yes. Cause I just think about how many friends and fans gravitate towards Red Bull that I think if they saw this, it's going to have them be more aware of like who is in our sport, especially just leading up to the Olympics and things of that nature. I guess, is it going to hit, you know?
Well, so to clarify, they're two separate ones. So Red Bull's doing one and then Netflix is doing one.
Right. Yeah. There's two different runs. So that's why I'm just like, hey, anything revolving track. And I feel like anytime someone puts something out about track and field itself, I'm just hoping it sticks. But I think it's more of having our fans be more aware of the people that are in our sport.
I think it's really dependent on the stories. Yeah. I mean, yeah. If you're a consumer of documentaries, specifically sports documentaries, they really do straddle two lines. You know, some documentaries are put on by organizations that might serve that organization to tell a good story. And then you want the documentary that serves the actual story, maybe the storyline that everybody's asking about. Jakob Ingebrigtsen and Josh Kerr, how do they really feel about each other?
Yeah.
How Fred Kerley, Noah Lyles, is there really a rivalry there? I think if you hit on, you know, these things that real fans are talking about and you get behind like the surface level stuff, that's when documentaries really have power.
Yeah.
Because they're telling you things that you don't already know. Right. Now, that's the question I will have for this Netflix documentary. Is it just about putting somebody on the camera saying this person is going to make an Olympic team and should be the best in the U.S. Like, that's not enough for me.
No. Yeah.
I need to know, like, what is behind them? Like, what is actually, you know, driving them, and what are their feelings? Like, that's the only way a documentary is going to hit in my book.
I agree. Like, when so I've seen Breakpoint, and again, these are the same people that will be making this documentary series for track and field. I think, and it's the stuff you don't already know. Like, I'm sitting there watching this and they're showing all the behind the scenes of all these athletes and like what they're going through to, you know, go to a meet and all this stuff. It's like all the, and it almost humanizes them in a way and tells their story beyond just like showing them going out and playing tennis and saying they're the best in the world. Like, I think that's what we need to see, because people will only tune in for track and fields, let's be honest, like once every 4 years for the Olympics. Yeah. And you see them on surface level because you see, oh, Noah Lyles wins the, you know, the 200 or something. Oh, cool. He's like the fastest guy in the 200 in the world. But that's like all, if you're a casual fan just tuning in, that's all you really know. But if you watch something and it kind of goes more into seeing more of that human part of the story and the behind the scenes and teaches you something you don't know, that's when it becomes like, all right, that was a good docuseries.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. So stay tuned for all of that.
We do have some comments, by the way. Really? Hit a little bit. Apparently, Let's Run had an April Fool's joke yesterday about Kerr and Ingebrigtsen.
I saw that. Did you see that?
I did not.
So basically, they had the top story. It was a headline that read that Amazon pays Jakob and Josh Kerr $1 million to trash talk for their upcoming like series. Because they're doing a series on Jakob and for Amazon Prime.
Well, I'd say yes to that. I would say yes to that. And then All the Game said that F1 is not a niche sport outside the U.S. or inside the U.S. maybe, but outside the U.S.
But I think that's the point of it, right? It's like it was niche.
Capturing fans inside.
It was niche in the U.S. And I think that was the whole point, is to capture those fans. Yeah. And now you've seen what it's done to F1 in the U.S. Yes. You can see it here in Austin, like the amount of people going to Circuit of the Americas to go watch a race there.
Lovely. All right. Anything else from the chat before we move on to our final segment? All right, looking ahead, we have the Miramar Invitational, and we're about to preview some of the individuals that potentially could be racing, which I'm super stoked about. I think it's going to be quite spicy.
Yes.
That's what I have in my notes is spicy.
Yes.
All right, I think the most notable name, too, Sha'Carri Richardson and Sherika Jackson. Again, I feel like they're probably going to open up here. I don't necessarily know what they're running, but we definitely know it's going to be some type of sprint.
Yeah, it's been publicized that they'll both be competing here and opening up their seasons. Mm-hmm. Sha'Carri actually opened up at this event last year and ran one of the fastest times ever, wind legal or not. She ran 10.57 wind assisted. I believe Jackson, I think, ran the 400, I believe, in this event last year as well. Obviously, this is going to get some big eyes. People have been curious to see, you know, Sha'Carri, what she's going to do. She didn't run indoors. You know, she's all in on outdoors. We obviously know she's the defending world champion in the 100. And I think people are curious to see what she can open up with, because yes, we saw what she did at this event last year. So if she opens up, that would be really cool to see. Some other athletes, too, that are potentially going to be racing here are Christian Coleman, TT Terry, Ajay Wilson, and Brianna Williams.
Okay. I'm really excited for Christian Coleman, especially just coming off of the gold at World Indoor Champs. Where is he going to be now, moving from the 60 to the 100? I know there's just been a lot of conversation. Like, when you just see him face Noah Lyles, it's like Noah Lyles has that closing strength, and it was just like Christian is the rocket starter trying to hold on. So now how do we translate that to the 100? Yeah. Because we don't want to get caught at 60. We want to get caught at 110 meters, right? So I'm just curious to see where Christian Coleman is at right now. I think he's in a really solid spot, probably very confident going into the outdoor season. So just stay tuned.
Yeah. And I'm also personally curious for Ajay Wilson, because I feel, again, 2024 is a big year. And I would argue that the 800 it's become more competitive over the years. I mean, I think back to when, she was dominating for such a long time, but now you have new figures. I mean, it's more common seeing people go, 157, 158 in that 800 consistently. Mm-hmm. So really want to see what she opens up with here for sure.
Yeah, the 800 is starting to become very, very competitive.
Yes,
for sure. So yeah. It's like, again, I'm right there with you in the same boat, just seeing where Wilson is at and hoping to make that next Olympic team there. And then Brianna Williams from Jamaica, just a young, talented individual, just trucking away, trying to make more teams as we go through it. So again, big invitational coming up this weekend. Corey, are you looking for anything?
Well, I just want to comment on Miramar. Really fast track.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Built for speed. That's a great place to open up your season if you're Sha'Carri Richardson, because it's kind of built for sprint,
For sure.
Capabilities there.
Boom. Love it. So we're going to have more speed coming up this weekend. Yes. So exciting as we're gearing up towards trials, Olympics, people are starting to make their debuts. And of course, FloTrack is the place to get all of that information. So stay tuned to the site for all of our content. Per usual, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Please like, subscribe, share this with your friends, your families, social media, tag us, all the things. We're wishing you all the best, and we'll see you next week.